Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Saki.
And welcome to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you, of course, by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Make sure you check out Great Lakes Dragway this weekend, because, of course, it's the Time Machine Nationals. This is the big one. This is one of the biggest weekends of the year, and one of my favorites, too. This is a chance for you to see all the great old dragsters of yesterday, and it's just a really cool event. And with all the upgrades that Great Lakes Dragway continues to do throughout the year and in years past, it's just a fun thing to do this weekend. So don't forget, this weekend, of course, the Time Machine Nationals with the front engine Nostalgia Nitro Dragsters today only. And what's cool with Great Lakes Dragway, you can get a two-day pass for today and tomorrow. And then don't forget the special guest appearance by a fan favorite, a Hall of Fame drag racer, Arnie the Farmer Beswick. That's at the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. And I'd also like to thank our friends at David Hobbs Honda, of course, DavidHobbs.com, for the best in not only new cars, new Hondas, but also certified used Hondas. That's at DavidHobbs.com, 6100 North Green Bay Avenue. And, of course, joining me as usual, it is the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, what a beautiful day it is. I'm doing fantastic. Steve, how about yourself?
Good, good. Not a great week weekend for Wisconsin sports fans. Of course, with the Bucks struggling like they are, and I mean it. I guess the post game presser, and we can bring in Mayor Mitch on this too. You know, there's still confidence amongst the players. I don't know if they're just fronting for the cameras, Mitch, or what. But I mean, they think they can come from behind and win. Went four straight on the Heat, but I mean, it just seems startling. The two things that I've noticed being a lifelong NBA fan is the what the Heat are bringing, the energy and drive, and the lackadaisical kind of sloppiness that we've seen with the Bucks since they've gone, you know, into the bubble here. It, and just the coaching decisions. I mean, you're basically using the same, subbing the same way you do in a regular season game. It certainly is frustrating, isn't it, Mitch?
Yeah, I mean, and you had George Hill after the game last night, and he said, you know, fair point to him was, you know, let's make history. We've never played in a bubble before, and so why can't we win four straight and be the first team to win four straight? I know the Bucks earlier this year won 18 in a row, Steve, and, you know, so, but you're right. I mean, it's over. It is. It's sad. Yeah. It's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, honestly, Miami, I would not be surprised if they won it all.
Right. They look that good. I mean, as a team, they really have gelled. And you just, they have a drive. And they've come into the series, they're hungry, you know?
Yeah, and every basket, I know the first three quarters, we all felt great last night. The Bucks were up by a dozen heading into the fourth quarter, but you kind of could just tell that still every shot the Bucks took last night was a difficult shot, it seemed like. You know, maybe every three or four possessions they get a wide open look and they'd obviously miss it, but every possession was a tough shot, whereas Miami is going down and doing what they want, as they've done for the first three games of the series. The Bucks just on offense are not moving, and they don't seem to be making the adjustments. that they need to make. And, you know, I'm not a basketball coach, so I can't really lay out a list of things they should be doing differently.
Right.
But I think one of them would be playing your best players more than 35 minutes. And that's what happened last night. Again, was less than 36 minutes from Giannis and Chris Middleton. And that just can't happen. And then after the game, you know, Coach Bud is just so, whatever, you know,
right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you got to give them credit, you know, it's like, no, you got to do something differently, or at the very least make the easy adjust. And Wes Matthews again did not play, I don't think, the entire fourth quarter, as Jimmy Butler did again what he did. And game three was a carbon copy of game one.
You know, it was interesting, too, is when they mentioned, you know, they can bring in their siblings now into the bubble and that. And Jimmy Butler said, no, I'm here to work. And then they show the picture of Giannis with his girlfriend and the new baby, and then you got the opposite.
That doesn't bother me as much.
Until you saw the play, though.
I mean,
and
yes.
Then you saw Jimmy Butler playing. I mean, MVP. I mean, who's the MVP in this series? Jimmy Butler. It ain't Giannis.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah. I don't know how much of it we can blame on Giannis. I would think. A big part of me thinks this guy's the MVP, and they continue to say he's back-to-back MVP, even though, I mean, everybody's saying it now, even though it's not official. Although it seems to me, if my memory serves me correct, there was a lot of scuttlebutt even before the hiatus and during the hiatus that LeBron could win the MVP. Well, he doesn't look a whole lot better, I guess, than he did either before the hiatus too. So, you know, they've already crowned him back-to-back MVPs, and at some point in this series, he needed to assert his will more than he ended up with 29 in game two, and I think he had 21 last night, but that's just not good enough. And the team plays off of him, basically. And if he's just beating his head against the proverbial and literal wall that the Miami defense has created against him, you're not going to go anywhere.
And Tyler Hero certainly stepped up, and you got to give a tip of the hat to him, because I don't think anybody saw this a year and a half ago, what he's doing now. So, but you know what? Doesn't matter, guys. Clippers are going to win it all anyway. So,
well, I hope so. And I would not be surprised if it's Heat and Clippers in the, and that's easy after, you know, their first game of their series. But Denver just, I don't know.
Yeah.
They did not look very good. They were worn out. I don't think they were ready to play. We'll see how they bounce back. But it's, you know, Heat and Clippers, and I would not be surprised if the Heat won it all. Boston's fine too, but I just think the way Miami's playing and the amount of talent they do have and the cohesiveness they play with, I don't know if anybody's gonna take them down.
Yeah. Well, at least the Brewers are winning, and as my buddy texted me the other day, even if they do have a 300-pound first baseman. So, all right, moving on. Jeff Orlowski last weekend.
He does look like he could probably be playing at the. Near the Great Lakes Dragway down in Union Grove at the softball
league. You know, back in the day, there was a team, this was way before your time, Mitch, and even Jeff, there was a softball team nationally known. In fact, I think this might have been the first live broadcast on ESPN. There's a softball team called the Milwaukee Schlitz. And, yes, he would fit in very well on that team back in the day. So, Jeff Orlowski, the Polish Pipe Bomb.
Hello.
We had NASCAR Series race number 26, the 62nd annual Coke Zero Sugar 400, or what we like to call it, the Firecracker 400, last week at Daytona. And William Byron, the winner in the 24 car, over Chase Elliott. Hendrick 1 and 2, of course, with everybody's favorite Denny Hamlin 3rd, Martin Truex, and Bubba Wallace in the 43 car 5th. And everybody was kind of excited. I liked it. I think it was more for the results. I think people were happy to see Byron win it. I think they were happy to see Bubba in fifth. You had Bowman. You had Brendan Gaughan in the top 10. Chris Buescher, who we mentioned on the show, finishing the top 10. And you weren't too excited about the race, were you?
It was okay. It's getting a ton of love, like it was one of the greatest races ever, and I just didn't see that. I didn't feel the excitement. I wasn't jumping off my couch or even really sitting on the edge of my couch. But, you know, I'm kind of biased when it comes to plate racing anyway. But, the top 10 was great. It was, you know, it's nice seeing different names up there. Obviously, Super Speedway, Daytona, Talladega. These are the tracks where you get the Brendan Gaughans and the Bubba Wallace and Buescher and those guys who can finish in the top 10 and have themselves one hell of a day, both for themselves and for their sponsors. So, you know, on that side, it was good with Byron winning. We said last week that we wanted somebody to win their way in, not just have everybody point their way in. Right. I'm happy Jimmy Johnson missed the playoffs. It's time for him to ride off into the sunset. So sayonara, Jimmy, and enjoy the last 10 races riding in 20th. So, you know, all in all, it was an okay race, but I wasn't on the edge of my seat, and it didn't pack the excitement like so many other tracks, like Darlington, I think, will tomorrow night, for example. But it sure is getting a whole lot of love on Facebook and Twitter.
I liked it. I mean, I think it was a couple of things, though. I think it's because it was Daytona. It was a night race. With everything in the country, what's going on, it was a nice diversion. So I think that way, I think people were just happy to see. People are always comfortable with Daytona. They love Daytona. Daytona's ratings are always good. And I think it was just like putting on an old pair of tennis shoes in the summer, feeling comfortable and, enjoying a race. I mean, you know, I think that was just part of it. And plus, you know, we talked about this too with the shortened races last week and that. You know, it's a 400 miler, which is a comfortable time. Let me see if I can get the time of the race. It wasn't overly long. They did have a red flag on it, but, it's... And here, time of race, 2 hours, 39 minutes. I mean, yeah. They're 2 hours, basically 2 hours and 40 minutes. That's about the length of time a NASCAR race shouldn't it be?
Yeah. You know, the time it took to get in was fine. You know, it helped that there wasn't multiple big ones. And, yes, there was a red flag and all that, which slowed it down. And, obviously, the competition caution and stage breaks and all that slow it down to begin with anyway. But yeah, it had a nice pace to it. And you know, you can't argue with that. It's good for the TV audience and it's good to hold people's attention. So, you know, all in all, was it a successful race? Sure. You know, I don't understand, you know, people are treating it like it was, the second coming. And I just didn't see that, but, like I said, you know, we set the playoffs finally. I think it's very interesting that Daytona was the regular season cutoff because anything and everything can happen. And the only people who went in there comfortable, yeah, there was probably 8 or 9 people. Clint Bowyer locked himself into the playoffs really early in the Daytona race. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of positions. I think it was just, you know, 3 that officially needed to get locked in. So there were some guys riding around who were comfortable. And, you know, that might be another reason why the top 10 looked the way it did.
We're playing a little bit loosey-goosey on this show just because we're going up against another race. And the reason would be being that is it's Kentucky Derby weekend, which, boy, this is a really screwed up year, isn't it? We had the Indianapolis 500 a couple of weeks ago. We got the Kentucky Derby today. We had the Firecracker 400 just before Labor Day. Everything is just totally whacked out. But had TV on, and as I like to do, if I want to get to sleep, nothing better than an old West Coast baseball game. And it was interesting. The Padres and the A's. And what was unique about that no, I'm a uniform nerd. And here we have the only baseball team in baseball currently using the color brown, which I suppose is a good thing, with the Padres. And then you had the Oakland Athletics, which is the only team that uses green and yellow in their color scheme. But what made me think of it is they mentioned the time of the game last night in which the Padres looked very good. I mean, that team can hit. It's such a difference between the Brewers. If you really want to feel bad, Fernando Tatis has 14 home runs, which is more RBIs than Christian Yelich has right now. So, anyways, the time of the game last night was 2 hours and 40 minutes. So that's kind of what made me think of the Firecracker 400 also being 2 hours and 40 minutes. That's a good time for, you know, that's a really for a sporting event. I don't care what it is, 2 hours and 40 minutes. I think is pretty much the optimal time. That gives you a little bit of time for an intro and a little bit of an outro, and you got a 3-hour kind of package there, Jeff.
Yeah, and it is, and you know, baseball's been working on pace of play and all that, yet every rule change that they've instituted and everything that Manfred has done to try to ruin the game is just to help the offense. So you would think that, you know, they whine and cry about pace of play, relievers have to face, you know, three batters or get out of an inning, all those kind of crazy rules, yet they want nonstop offense, which slows the game down. So it 2 hours 40 minutes is great. It, you know, that's definitely in my wheelhouse for attention span. You know, I love baseball. I don't care if I'm at a ball game and the game goes 4 hours, I'm not going to sit there and complain about it. You know, right. I'll just shut up and grab another hot dog or six. And you know, so I don't understand. I'm not the whole pace of play guy. But when it comes to racing, I think, you know, when you have a fringe sport and all that, and you're trying to attract a wider television audience and more casual fans to get involved in it, you definitely need it to be shorter rather than longer. That's the one thing that the NBA does great, is that their games, you can pretty much set your watch to them. It's about 2 hours and 10 minutes, 2:15. And the game is over. And so even if you're going as a spectator and a game starts at 7, you know you're walking out of there by 9:15 and you're home by 9:45. And I think that's great because it works like clockwork and you could totally plan your night. If you got to go to work the next morning, it's not that big of a deal. You know, you can wake up and go and it's not a problem. So, you know, I think 2:40 is great, and I'll tell you, for Daytona, I'm shocked it only took 2:40.
Yeah, it's surprisingly too, especially, you know, they can turn into crash fest, you can get red flags and whatnot, but wasn't too bad. Let's playoffs real quick. I don't want to dwell on this too long, but because we pretty much have known who was going to be in the playoffs for a while now. But, of course, we have Harvick and Hamlin. That's the two-headed monster. Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano. Chase Elliott and Martin Truex. Martin Truex, Mr. Consistency. He's been really, really starting to come on as of late. Then you got Ryan Blaney, who is you don't know what, you know, he's had a lot of bad luck. Bowman and Byron have looked good at times. Of course, there's Jeff's favorite driver, Austin Dillon. And then you have Cole Custer, who I don't want to say lucked in, but, you know, had a good race and you know, glimpses of some talent. Eric Amarola, Clint Bowyer, who we'll talk about him later. Kyle Busch, Kurt Busch, and DiBenedetto. And you know, well, here we go. Let's go. The first round's going to have Darlington, Richmond, and Bristol. And if you look at the four that could get eliminated out, I now see, I think it was Dennis last week said it's going to be DiBenedetto, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, and Bowyer, I think. Isn't that what he picked? No, he picked, or did he pick Custer, Dillon, and Matt DiBenedetto?
Yeah, I think he picked Custer, Dillon, and DiBenedetto. You know, obviously everybody knows about Kyle Busch's struggles this year. Still hasn't won a race yet, which is very surprising for all NASCAR fans. Kurt Busch has had a fast car all year long. His car has been a hell of a lot faster than most of the finishes he has to show for it. I think, you know, Eric Amarola the same way. Ryan Blaney, you mentioned it. You don't know what you're going to get week in, week out with him. If the playoffs would have started about 5 weeks ago, Ryan Blaney probably would have been in the top four favorites to win the title. You got Hamlin, Harvick, Truex, and then you got the question mark. But he has raced himself out of that position with his struggles the last few weeks.
Yeah, should be interesting. Well, we'll talk more about this at the bottom of the hour with when Dennis Michelson from DMIC Media joins us. We're going to take a quick break, and when we actually come back, we're going to talk a little open wheel racing with me and Jeff coming up next on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Obsonda. Back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zofke along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski. And some news in Formula One here. Of course, we have the Italian Grand Prix this weekend at Monza. Mercedes, Jeff, Formula One team. Somebody dug into how much they were spending on Formula One last year to win the title, which you finished 1 and 2. They spent, are you ready for this? But take a guess how much money they spent.
$200 million.
Your phone cut out. How much?
$200 million.
$200 million. You wish. They wish. Ready? $442 million on Formula One last year.
Well, that's it, huh?
Just under $500 million.
Wow.
You know the old adage, what is it? Money is speed. Yeah. That's the gross national product of many nations.
Yeah, it is. That is a outrageous number. I was sitting there flipping through the channels this morning, Steve, and I saw F1 qualifying.
And your phone is still cutting out. Yeah, your phone is still cutting out here. Renault F1 is reporting to change their name next year. They're going to go with Alpine, which to many Americans is Alpine, but it's pronounced Alpine. That's kind of like their sports side of Renault, so it should be the Alpine Formula One team next year, and it'll be interesting to see how they've been showing a lot of speed as of late, and been kind of moved past Ferrari and challenging Racing Point for that third spot behind, of course, the almighty Mercedes, and then Red Bull, who's in that second spot. Jeff, how are you doing? Is your phone better?
I hope so. What's the latest on Jochen Rindt?
Jochen Rindt, yes. It's the fifth. Today is the 50th anniversary of the 1970 world champion who lost his life, unfortunately, this weekend at Monza. In a practice crash in 1970, he was the first posthumous world champion, locking in the championship, and was crowned champion after he had passed away. This weekend, back in 1970, drove for Team Lotus and basically replaced Jim Clark on that team in a roundabout way, and won the championship, and unfortunately had a crash. And the car spun violently, and he did not wear a crotch belt. And unfortunately, the way the accident is, he received injuries because of that. And tragic accident, but many remember Jochen Rindt, and he had a beautiful wife, the Austrian driver, who passed away 50 years ago today in a crash in a Lotus.
He passed away from crotch injuries?
No, he did not die from that. He just felt uncomfortable. If you think of it, a mere 5 years before, 5 or 6 years before, most Formula One drivers still weren't wearing seatbelts. Because they were so scared of being trapped in a flaming race car, a lot of them thought, you know what, I'd rather take my chances being thrown clear of my race car than being burned alive. So a lot of them didn't start wearing safety belts until the mid to late 60s.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Especially with the speeds. They still had great speed, you know, all the way back then. So
right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That makes it even more unbelievable. That's brutal. When, Steve, I was looking... trying to find the next IndyCar race. When's that taking place?
Well, apparently it's going to be the first week in October in Indianapolis. As of right now, that's the Autumn Fest, whatever they're calling it, on the road course at Indianapolis. A doubleheader there, but they're still trying to slot in the Mid-Ohio race, which they're still waiting. You know, the track is working with, you know, state officials because of you know, social distancing and everything, and trying to figure out when exactly they can have this race. It was postponed. I believe it's supposed to happen this weekend, and they're kind of in a wait and see and in a holding pattern with that. So as of right now, we're not going to see right now, unless something changes in a bit here, we're not going to see an IndyCar race in the month of September.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, obviously all the people that listen to the show week in, week out know that I complain about the IndyCar schedule all the time, and I know that this isn't their fault because of the Mid-Ohio race and Corona and all that kind of garbage. But yeah, that's insane that they're going to go a month from one race to the next. That it's hard to build up a whole lot of momentum and fan interest when you race once a month.
Well, and they were supposed to do a West Coast swing, and they just canceled those two races. They were supposed to race at Laguna Seca in Portland, and obviously Portland's having some minor issues out there, and then also at Laguna Seca, so the West Coast is still pretty much still shut down and everything. You can't even get a haircut. Some people can get a haircut out, but yeah. And then one of our friends of the show, some breaking news, right?
Yeah, good old Leo, friend of the show. He's dealing with some medical issues, so we wish him well and hope he gets better and back on his feet real quick.
Yeah, and then also Willie T. Ribbs is signed up for the Superstar Racing Experience series, the XRX series, they're calling it. That's the series that was started with Tony Stewart and Ray Evraham. And what's the most important thing about that deal is, yes, they have a television contract with CBS Sports Network. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next few races. And I believe there's going to be a kind of like a Cup/Trans-Am type car. It'll be interesting to see how that works out. So interesting to see how that continues to develop and what other drivers they get. They'll have more drivers announced as they continue on here. But right now we got Willie T. Ribbs, Tony Stewart, looks like Tony Kanaan, Paul Tracy, Bobby Labonte, and Elio Castroneves. And this is a series that's supposed to premiere in primetime on CBS Sports Network in the summer of 2021. So it'll be interesting to see about that. I tell you what, let's take a break now, Jeff. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media. Talk more NASCAR coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
Final Inspection. Final Inspection. Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
Inspection Show. Steve Zotke, along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, joining us. Ah, yes, on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Dennis Michelson. Dennis, welcome to the show, sir.
You guys are crazy.
What?
You're just figuring that out.
Yeah, it's been a long time figuring it out. Long time. But you know, once I figure it out, something I'm right on the. Right on the money the rest of the time, as they say.
So, some questions coming up for the 2021 season. It looks like we're going to have Nashville, but what other things do you think that might change up or may remain the same with the schedule next year, Dennis?
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see how many changes we do see because of the lack of fans causing some financial woes for some of the tracks this year. It's also going to be interesting to see what happens with, you know, are we done with Chicagoland now totally? I mean, Are we going to see things change? I mean, this year, 2020, nothing would surprise me, including having a giant asteroid hit Phoenix International Raceway right before the final. I mean, nothing that has gone this season has gone according to plan. Of course, nothing has gone according to plan in anywhere in the world this year, so I guess that's fitting.
Yeah, it certainly has been. And, you know, of course, there's a rumor of a new track being announced in the Midwest, possibly a road course on July 4th weekend, but that remains to be seen. Of course, those who have heard of that, and if you try and get a motel in that area, it's impossible to get a motel in that Midwestern city, possibly north of Chicago, on July 4th weekend. But we'll see how that develops in the near future, Dennis.
Yeah, things are very very up in the air. Let's just put it that way.
And the other thing we talked about earlier is the chance of some teams going to the wayside for 2021, and it looks like one of them may be Germain Racing.
Yeah, I actually last year talked to a guy that does some work for Germain Racing, and we were talking about, I was actually had an idea for doing a some promotion and some podcast work for the company or for that race team, and you know, also sort of trying to set up a minor league to NASCAR type podcast so they could actually develop some guys and bring some money drivers into that team. And you know, quickly was told that, hey, we're not sure of anything in the future. And a lot of it had to do with what was Geico going to do as a sponsor. And that might be the reason that everything is going away for that team. So it's a shame, but it's not going to be the only team we see die. I wouldn't be surprised if even some of these bigger teams that have three or four cars this year cut back next year. I wouldn't even be surprised to see that happen at a large team. It's just, there's so much uncertainty. The sponsors this year didn't get anything compared to the value of what they expect from a NASCAR sponsorship, because fans weren't there for the activations. The ratings on TV were not where anybody expected them to be. And there was no benefit to being a NASCAR sponsor as far as rewarding some of your distributors. And when you take away all of the benefits that a NASCAR sponsorship gives to you, why continue at these rates? I've already been told that just based on the advertising return on investment, that NASCAR is a lousy investment right now because of the cost it takes per race to advertise. It's great for the Daytona 500 the rest of the season. There is no return on investment unless you have these activations at the track, whether you have these mm-hmm. other things that you do that right. can help support your distributors around the country for a lot of these products or services. And without that, there's no benefit to being on the NASCAR team anymore. And that's the tragedy, but that's going to be why we're seeing more teams leaving.
Well, and more teams need to do that because, you know, I talked of being in Chicagoland last year and just absolutely stunned on how little was going on pre-race and all that. They had some, you know, new country guy that sounds the same as all the other new country guys who did a concert. But besides that, there was absolutely nothing. So, you know, the sponsors need to step up their game, and NASCAR does too. We talked about, you know, Germain possibly closing the doors. Dennis, did you see the tweet from Levine when he talked about his exit from NASCAR? Because he sure burned them good.
Yeah, I saw some of that. I didn't see a ton of – I didn't see all of it. I have been just in this social media avoidance zone for at times, because everybody's so negative in the sports world right now. And, you know, all you hear is about politically motivated stuff. And, you know, the NASCAR news on social media has been mainly bad news. So there'll be days when I go into a social media blackout just to keep my sanity. But yeah, there's the problem that you have right now is you had a leader who thought that NASCAR was going to be worth a ton more than it is right now as far as sponsoring a car, being involved in races, all that kind of thing. And he was wrong. And that somebody is now been totally shunned from the NASCAR world by his own family. But yet they're not undoing some of the things that he did. I still believe that one of the appeals of NASCAR to fans and to teams and drivers was the fact that you could pull a Robbie Reiser, Matt Kenseth years ago. And that wasn't that many years ago. I mean, we're talking late 90s where you could decide, you know what, I'm going to build me a Cup car, or I'm going to build me a Busch car, and I'm going to take a shot at this, and I'm going to get a trailer, and I'm going to pull this sucker over to North Carolina, and I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to go racing. And instead, what you have now is it costs so much money to build a car that the return on investment to the drivers isn't there either. There used to be a time when you could live off of what you made racing in NASCAR. Now you got to have that sponsorship just to break even. And a lot of these guys are seeing that sponsorship not worth what it used to be. So I'm just of the belief that NASCAR fell in love with technology, and unfortunately the fans don't love the technology, and it makes it more expensive for the drivers as well.
Well, they actually kind of envied what Formula One was doing, and they wanted those big, they kind of even said, we'd rather have 24 large teams than have, you know, a bunch of big teams and then some small, you know, mid teams. And then, you know, and they kind of with the system they have set up now, that's what they were looking for. Well, that's all fine and dandy when economic times are good. But we've seen this with other racing series too. You know, they love the manufacturers, and they screw the independents. And then the manufacturers leave on a whim, and then they're like, oh, and they screwed all the independents, and then they have small fields. I mean, you look at what the fields that they had up at Road America, for their series up there. I mean, they had two groups of 10 cars. That's ridiculous. You can't have a race like that. You know, so I mean, it's just so frustrating seeing this, and with NASCAR and what Levine said. You know, he mentioned about, you know, they're talking about Joe Gibbs doesn't have had a terrible track record of chewing up and spitting out so-called satellite teams, and then NASCAR turned a blind eye this and only cares about optics and politics, he said. And then he said, and then when he asked about when Levine Family Racing was leaving, he tweeted out, he goes, I've expected nothing from NASCAR, and since our announcement, I've heard nothing from them. Of course, that kind of goes along with our experience during our first 5 years. We never talked to anybody from NASCAR. We came in as nobodies, leaving the same. And I think there's a definite disconnect with NASCAR and with some of the teams and that, except for some of the big boys. And you saw this, you know, you bring up Robbie Reiser and that. Yes, that is what, I mean, you know how NASCAR grew such a big, huge fan base in Wisconsin and the Midwest was they had a pipeline of drivers that we saw, you know, your Mark Martins, Rusty Wallaces, Alan Kowicki's and whatnot, that were, you know, this farm system they had with ARTCO and ASA going to NASCAR. So we saw these drivers going up, and there was the fans really felt, you know, aligned with them. And same thing with Robbie Reiser and Kenseth. And you talk about a small team, you know, we've talked about this Rockingham, the famous Rockingham win with Kenseth and Tony Stewart You know, I mean, that team was about to go under, and that saved the team. And look what happened. You know, became a champion out of that. So, you know, and you don't see that anymore. And I think that's why there's a frustration with the NASCAR fan base. And you look at Bob Levine with some of the ownership, too. Same thing with James Finch. You listen to the James Finch interview that Dale Jr. did with him on his podcast. Yeah, the NASCAR has turned their back on Levine's and the James Finches in the racing world, and that's a real shame, Dennis.
Well, yeah, and NASCAR needs the Penske's. They need the Hendrick Motorsports. They need the Joe Gibbs Racing. They need these big mega teams, but they also need Ted Geschechter's of the world, and they need the Levine Family Racing Team, and they need, you know, all these small teams, because guess what ends up happening, or what used to happen in the old days? You used to be a small team. Look at what happened with Richard Childress and his history. He was just hanging on as a racer, running what was at that, the Sportsman Series, the tune-up series for the Cup guys, got a chance to run because of a driver's strike at Talladega, got a chance to make some money, and got on the France family good side for helping out. The next thing you know, he's got Humpy Wheeler, you know, helping him out. He's got this guy helping him out and this guy helping him out, leaning, you know, sort of guiding him and helping him develop. And look what he became. He ended up being a seven-time champion in the game series and going on to have this mega team. This is a guy that grew up selling peanuts at Bowman Gray Stadium and now is, you know, gifting tens of millions of dollars to the local hospital. That's the kind of success story that can't happen nowadays, because you have to come into the series with $100 million. You know, the best way to make a small fortune in racing, start with a big fortune and go racing. And you'll have a small fortune and then you'll have nothing before end of time. And NASCAR does not care about these little teams. It's not anything new. I did an article almost 20 years ago now, in 2001, I did an article about the other side of the garage, talking about all the smaller teams in Busch and how they were ignored and how they were treated so shabbily in tech versus what the big boys were, how the big boys were treated. And that same thing happens at the top level with these smaller teams now, where the large teams are basically running the sport. But the bad news for NASCAR is sometimes these teams get old and they don't have a succession plan, and you don't have anybody who wants to take them over, and you don't have the sponsorship that wants to stay with them. What happens? They go out of business. And when they go out of business, you better have five or six other teams that are developing, because that's NASCAR history. That is racing history. It's happened in IndyCar. It's happened in Formula One. It's happened in every racing series that's out there. Teams come and teams go.
Yeah, it certainly does. We're talking with Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media. We'll be taking a break here in just a moment. Real quick, Dennis, let's get your prediction for Darlington in the Cup Series.
I'm going with Harvick. I'm not going to get anything fancier than taking Harvick.
It sounds good. I can't argue with that. It'll be interesting to see if it turns into the Harvick Hamlin show, which I think it might tomorrow at Darlington. Let's take a quick break now with Dennis. We certainly appreciate it. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rich Zimmerman and maybe the possibility of you being able to get a Road America license plate on your car. We'll find out more in just after this on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, and joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, the official photographer of the Final Inspection Show, it is Rich Zimmerman. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hey, Z-Man. Hey, Jeff. How are you guys?
I'm fantastic, Rich.
And this is a pretty cool deal. Rich got a hold of me a couple days ago and said, hey, this is a pretty neat deal about getting a Road America plate. Now, it's not a done deal, but it's something that could happen if the fans jump aboard, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah, I believe it's Amy Somapolito's idea. She does the National Park of Speed Facebook thing. And her idea is to have a license plate like we have the Wolf plate, a Badger plate, a Packer plate in the state of Wisconsin. So you could have that rather than a regular old boring plate. The stage it's at right now is we need 500 signatures at Road America's office by September 18th. And there's a DMV form 2090 that you can get off the final inspection Facebook page. I put it on there. And just sign it with your name and address and say you would be interested, and then mail it to Road America. But they need them by Friday, September 18th. It would be $25 extra every year to give to our great state to use for whatever they do it for. But the artwork is in process, but right now it's got to be approved by the state, and then they get together with Road America and figure out the artwork, and we go from there. Hopefully it'll have the track on it.
500 signatures shouldn't be too hard to get. So,
no,
you know,
I think they probably already got it.
I'm sorry?
They might even already have it, because, like, this weekend the Porsche Club's up there, and you can sign up in the paddock shop or the office, too. So it's not necessarily that you have to do it online and get the form and mail it up there.
Yeah, well, you know, thanks. It was great that you threw that on Facebook, and still urge everybody to download it and fill it out, mail it out to Road America. Deadline's coming up September 18th, so get it done, get it in. And, Rich,
yeah.
just thank you for being one of the rock stars on the Final Inspection Show Facebook page. You're always posting great stuff and wonderful pictures and all that, so you're a true Final Inspection rock star here.
Thank you, sir. We try to keep some images up there all the time. Been shooting at Road America since 73, so we try to throw a few up there now and then and stay current.
And for those who I really like this show, because I've always been kind of jealous, because Indiana actually has one for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, which I thought was an interesting little twist, that it's not actually the Speedway, but it's the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum. And I got a couple of friends that have that on their cars for their license plate.
Cool.
I always thought that was very cool. I thought, man, I wish I could have that on my car. Have Indiana plates on it.
Unfortunately, you got to be in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Right. But for those who may not be aware, Rich Zimmerman, of course, longtime photographer, and shoots for us, and was able to credential him at the Milwaukee Mile. That's when we first met, probably going on 10, 12, even more years ago. And we got reconnected when I saw you on the old PBS Milwaukee. What's the name of that show again?
I remember.
I remember
which I can't
Milwaukee,
remember.
And you were on that, and I saw, I know who that is, and we reconnected from that show. And Rich, who not only is a fantastic motorsports photographer, but did a lot back in the day when in rock and roll history, and has shot some of the most iconic concerts dating back to the 70s in the Midwest. So I've always been kind of a little bit jealous of him for some of the shows he's been able to see over the years. So Rich, we certainly appreciate all your contributions.
You bet. Thank you. Yeah, still trying to do the rock and roll thing, but of course with COVID, that's kind of shut that down. So we've been focusing on racing and going to vintage, hopefully in a couple of weeks at Road America, and keep the shutter clicking.
And you mentioned some of the projects, and you're trying to organize all your stuff. Let the listener, how many shots or you said you had in your library that you're trying to organize?
Oh, jeez. There's probably 7,000 rolls of film, and then there's 140 slide trays with 140 slides in each. And then we have the digital world, and I switched to digital in like 2008 or 9. So that's, yeah, I just retired last year, so I've got enough work for the next 30 years.
it's a little more than a weekend project.
Oh, God, I don't know how I worked on it while I was working. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Well, Rich, we certainly appreciate it. Make sure you check out his.
And there's rock on there and racing, and actually the show I remember is on there from Channel 10 on the homepage.
Very
and
cool.
I'm the only, I think still, that my dad and I are the only father-son to do that show on Channel 10 with Jim Peck.
Yeah, and for those who may not know, Rich is the son of media icon Carl Zimmerman, who worked many, many years at Channel 6. So,
yeah, we, Rich, 45, they don't know who he is.
No, unfortunately, no. But an absolute pillar in the media news community back in the day. So, Rich, thank you for taking time out, and make sure you check that out. How do you? Where's the site again?
RichZimmerman.com.
And the site for the license plate was the DOT. It's we posted it on our web page, on our Facebook page too.
Right.
So you can find it.
Or you can go right to the DOT. The form is MB2090. And then just mail it to Elkhart Lake, Attention Melody if you want, or just to their office. Actually, P.O. Box 338.
Very good.
It's neat. I think the state's going to be overwhelmed with a lot of signatures. I really don't think it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, should be interesting. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Cornelli of the VSCDA about their vintage racing event coming up at Elkhart Lake in a couple weeks after this on the Final Inspection Show.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.